Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Kia ora, welcome to Eco Living in Action on Otago Access Radio. Ko Maureen Howard Ahau. I'm a sustainable practice educator and communicator based in Dunedin and host of this show. Now, key to being able to adjust and cope with change is resilience. And literally, this word means being able to withstand external shocks and being able to still keep on functioning. So something that's very important, and with climate change already starting to impact on us, and I'm afraid quite a bit more of it on the way, what can we do to prepare ourselves? What can we do in our own properties and in our neighbourhoods to make them more, us and them, more resilient in the face of a changing climate? In this show, my guest, Nigel Cowburn, and I are looking at how we can make the landscapes that we live in more resilient. Nigel Cowburn is a landscape architect. He works primarily in Otago and Southland and can travel further afield. He has a bachelor in landscape architecture and a postgraduate diploma in rural studies. His passion is sustainability and creating resilient landscapes. So welcome to the show, Nigel.
Thanks, Maureen.
So we're live today, so that makes it all a little bit more fun, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Quite often live. But no, so I haven't had you on the show before, but and that's because you don't actually live in Dunedin, do you?
No, currently in the process of moving to Tapa Nui.
Ah, right. Okay. So what attracts you to there?
It's got a good microclimate, grow a lot of plants. It's got some great nurseries, and it's the shortest driving distance to the most places I'm likely to work in.
Right, okay, because you've got your own business, haven't you?
Yep. GrowPlan Limited, yep.
GrowPlan Limited, okay, so you can look up Nigel. So so tell me, you know, what got you interested in landscapes and in creating resilient landscapes?
Well, in the early 90s, I spent most of a couple of years cycling overseas, especially in the States, and found a really, really ordinary garden by a big hotel in Anchorage called the Ice Cube. It has really ordinary bedding sort of plants that one can be quite disdainful about, but it was quite a landscape moment for me. A little bit later, 3 months later, discovered hydroponics in California. Next year, I went to Kew in London and came back, got a gardening job, and then just did a series of gardening and landscape jobs and degrees and various other things. So that's the last 25 years.
Right, okay. And since then, you've been on this path. Mm. And but in particular, you are interested in that sustainability aspect, aren't you? So, you know, obviously, it is something that's become more and more pertinent, isn't it, over the years go by. And we see our things are changing quite rapidly and from all kinds of things. But for people listening, I guess I was really keen for us to talk about our own homes, our own households, our own, you know, our gardens and the immediate communities that we live in. But you said to me, look, I really want to talk about it at the water catchment level. Why is that?
Really, because it's the sort of, you look at the catchment, you look at where the water's coming to your house from, all of the water won't be coming onto your land from your land, it'll be coming from out of the boundaries. And you can break a river catchment down to tiny little streams. And most of Dunedin, for instance, you can probably break into a whole lot of pockets of between 10 and 50 houses, which is a nice group of people to come together and do something together, but also to be able to work individually and cooperate.
So you were seeing it as like sort of a useful social unit?
Yeah, sort of socio-political unit.
Right. But then also there's the geographical thing that we're all sharing and everything that we put down our drains, that's all going into the same stream,
isn't
it?
Yeah, my drains drain to your drain and... Yeah,
and that unites us.
Yes.
So yeah, it is good, and we don't really tend to think in that way, do we? Like, you know, in terms of our water catchments.
No.
Yeah. So, So getting back to thinking about some of the changes that we might expect, we don't want to frighten people, but actually, but it's good to be prepared, isn't it? And to think about, you know, how can we manage the situation and thrive going into the future? So what do you see as being some of the challenges that we will face?
One of the challenges that is already happening a lot is that we're losing seasonality and we're getting sudden bursts of rainfall. And also sudden heat events and sudden cold events, but especially heat events and rainfall. Many of my clients are farmers, including dairy farmers, and they tell me that they've lost the seasons. They just get 200 mils of rain in a night and then nothing for 4 months. We're going to have to start learning to live with that.
Yeah, and it's because, you know, as the planet is heating up a little bit, it's all that extra moisture is caught in the atmosphere, isn't it? And then it's going to come down somewhere.
Yeah. And it's not held as tightly as it was when the carbon level was lower.
Yeah, right, okay. So I guess this impacts on our food. And what about for, you know, us and coastal properties? Obviously, that's another factor too, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, that's a very hard factor to address.
It's a harder one to landscape against, isn't it?
Yeah.
And wind now, that's changing too, isn't it?
The wind is changing. We're getting stronger nor'westers. Normally in the south, nor'westers didn't really mean anything, but increasingly they are. And there's changes in wind direction. And things like El Ninos and La Ninas are changing. They're not like they used to be. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I guess what all of this says to us really, it's unpredictability, and that, you know, and so we're not able to predict things as we used to be able to do, and so what kind of the things, you know, can we be doing, like say, you know, to sort of make our home situations more resilient?
Well, probably starting at the individual household, individual piece of land. Thinking of owners, but also renters, because you want things that you can move around as well. To some extent, with the renting, you need cooperation from your landlord, but things as simple as a rainwater barrel under a couple of your downspouts, just a plastic drum, 200-litre drum. You can often get them for 20 or 30 bucks on Trade Me and sometimes free. You basically separate the downspout so you can run it into that. You're doing a few things there. You're taking water out of the flow, out of the stormwater, and you're giving yourself 200 litres of emergency water and water that you can irrigate with. And then you can step up from there. You can build, you can use something like a cattle trough under a spout and put a small garden in it so the water is flowing through the garden and on. You can grow food in that. So those are kind of portable things that will work for renters and owners.
And in the city, though, I think we have to be linked back into the stormwater system.
Yeah, most of these, pretty much all of these things challenge the district plan, the city plan. But I think the politicians are going to be debating the heights of tables while people are struggling to survive. So people have to learn how to do some of these things.
Right.
So I'm not advocating anyone does anything illegal, but rainwater barrels and small rain gardens are used all over the world.
I know I've got a system. Well, my downpipe comes into a container, but then the overflow, then I've got a design that goes into the stormwater system. So it's a way that, you know, you can, it's kind of given that water a second use in a way, you know,
yeah,
and you can use it.
But if you do a lot of these things quite seriously, you'll find that no water actually ever enters any of the pipes off of your land. It's all evaporated out. It grows through your plants, and it goes into the soil.
Right.
And percolates.
Right, so let's talk about then the plants and stuff, because that is a way that we can help make our properties more resilient, isn't it? What kind of planting do you recommend?
It depends what you want. I mean, really, you want plants that are going to do lots of things. You want plants that you can eat or burn or use maybe for weaving. I've got two jobs at the moment where I'm designing putting together collections of flax for weaving. So some of those sort of plants are quite good because they take up quite a lot of water. They have quite a lot of fine roots in the surface, and they put that water back into the atmosphere. Rushes, Yeah, there's irises. These are all sort of quite wet plants that will take water and push it upwards.
So you're thinking if someone's property is prone to pooling with water or something, then, you know, rather than just seeking to drain it all out, they can be looking to put in the right plants there, can't they?
That, but also you want lots of canopies of plants. You want trees, you want big trees, smaller trees, shrubs, ground covers all the way down. You've got lots of different canopies. If you do that, you can take out 50% of the rainfall before it hits your land.
Yeah, that's really good. Because I think we often forget the layers, don't we? And we just maybe have a little tree.
That's the most important thing in a landscape. Yeah.
And, well, this is a completely aside, but it's also really good for nature and biodiversity, because then we encourage the insect life, which then feeds our fantails. And so you'll find you'll get a lot more nature as well coming to your garden.
Yeah, you want lots of Hebes and Illyrias.
Right, okay. Yeah. So thinking of those layers, which will suck up to 50%, of your water. And so food producing plants, you talked about food as well.
Well, fruit trees, obviously, you have quite a big range of fruit trees. It's good to have a range of different plants because you've also got roots growing at different depths, and they can store and pull out water from different depths in the soil. And you'll also think about zoning plants. So put your highest need water, like vegetables and things, in one zone. Plants that don't need much water in another zone. You do that all the way through your garden. And you might even chain those together so they're stepped in height. So when the wettest zone dries to the next, wettest zone drains to the dry zone.
Right, okay. So having a bit of knowledge about what species like, is there any books you'd recommend? Or I guess we can look on the website for...
I'll be doing a blog post after this. So,
right. That would be great. Mm, that would be great to have.
There are very few approachable books on this topic. Yeah.
Right, okay. And I guess in terms of that food production, resilience, this is on a different topic, but being able to produce our own food will become increasingly important, won't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
In Dunedin here, we're fairly self-sufficient. A lot of people, you'll see a lot of food being grown in people's gardens, and there's quite a lot of networking. If people don't have the knowledge, they can get in touch with their community garden, I guess, too.
Community garden, for many ornamental plants, just go to the Dunedin Botanic Garden and wander around, because whatever's growing well there, yes, some of it does get a lot of care, but it shows you know, those plants are not dying in the cold, so that they withstand our winters, so they'll grow well here.
Right, okay. Now, in terms of, we talked about wind as being a factor as well, and what kind of plants would you recommend, you know, for dealing, like, and probably this is on a larger property maybe, but even on a small property we can, wind is...
You really want to filter wind rather than stop it, so you want... You want maybe some medium or bigger trees, medium trees on a small section, natives, exotics. So exotics, you might use various maples. There's one called field maple. For natives, Pittosporum. There's a Chatham Illyria, which is particularly good. Both of those don't get more than 5 or 6 meters. And maybe some hedges to 2 or 3 meters.
Right, so it's having that breakup because, and unlike a wall or a solid fence, you know, which just kind of, the wind curls up around it and still batters your house, this is actually a way of softening that wind.
It's better to have rough edges on things rather than straight edges, and that makes it more turbulent near the hedge, and then the wind drops away further away, so.
Yeah, and I think hedges are coming back into fashion. You know, people replace them. Well, I hope they are, replace them with fences, but you get so much more biodiversity, don't you, when you have a hedge.
Well, you can only build a wall 1.8 metres high without a permit, whereas a hedge, well, it's not yet illegal to plant hedges, so.
Right, good point. Mm. That's right, yeah. My hedge, it's become like a little forest, really.
Yeah.
Other interesting things that you mentioned before we came on air was, being able to reuse surfaces that would normally not have anything growing on them, so like walls and roofs.
Yeah. Obviously, these get a little bit more expensive, but the earliest the prototypes for living walls came out of an anarchist group in Berlin who were taking stormwater off roofs and running it through a whole series of barrels that were attached to scaffolding, and they had planting growing in the barrels all the way down to this five-story building. Living roofs, a bit more complex, but you can take a huge amount of water out of the sky that falls on your house from those. But at a more basic level, look at your lawn. A lot of water just runs off lawns because they become hard and compacted. So think about, do you need all of that lawn? Can that lawn be turned into shrubs? Can it be turned into a small orchard? Soak up more water, get some use out of it. And also then look at driveways. If you go to Larnach Castle in their car park, that area withstands trucks and buses, and yet it is just gravel. It's gravel that's been planted in grass.
Oh, really? It's a permeable surface.
It's a permeable. It's designed. The Larnach one is quite casual, but I design and build ones that are more formal. And again, they're all part of this sort of treatment train of things that mean that stormwater never leaves your land.
Right. So really thinking about the surfaces and trying to avoid more impermeable. We've got too much impermeable surface, so less of that tarmac and concrete. Yeah. So what about even the centre line? Because in Dunedin we've got a lot of steep hills, and so gravel doesn't suit for every driveway. But you can just maybe have strips instead of, just having it all in concrete.
You can run a strip. But there are also forms of asphalt and concrete that are porous. It seems to be rocket science to many council people and government people in New Zealand, but this is actually, in some states in America, this is law, and in some states in Europe. So the actual road itself, you can pour a bucket of water on it and it just disappears.
Wow.
And it goes into the roadbed where it's filtered away.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So we need to get some of this over here.
Yeah.
Sounds good. And also, I wonder if it's good for, dealing with roads getting slippy and.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
One more thing is all of these things make the local air a bit more humid and a little bit cooler.
Right. Because that's another thing. Obviously, when we think of climate change, we think of rising temperatures. Mm. And in cities in particular, this becomes a big issue, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's really a big issue for plants. So we don't want it too humid, but we also don't want it too dry. And if the air is too dry, then the plants die.
Right. Okay. But even just as a cooling thing.
Just a little bit.
The plants. They help cool the city, don't they?
Yes.
Okay, so returning some of that land back into permeable, semi-permeable, and green trees and stuff, it's all about, so that's a large amount of what you think about, isn't it?
Yeah, and one other aspect of resilience is really about the city and the city itself as a political entity and what their investment in the stormwater system. And if everyone starts doing this across the city, DCC doesn't need to spend so much on stormwater pipes and sewage pipes and all of these other things, because people are dealing with all of the water locally.
Right, yes. So it could become that it's part of a mandated thing, would you imagine, into the future?
It's mandated in many German cities.
Mm. I think even in some places it's, they don't like you to add in more asphalt, because obviously that's then causing more of a problem.
And asphalt is mostly oil.
Good point, yes. And that's the other thing is, I guess, the runoff that we get from this stormwater, because it is on tarmac and is there's a lot of pollutants coming off, aren't there?
Yeah. So again, you're trying to deal with pollutants, you're trying to trap sediment, especially sediment, because sediment carries brake lining materials and phosphate and other things and lead and things out of the asphalt into the sea. So we're doing everything we can to hold the water back, to slow it down, to extend its path length so it settles out. Yeah.
And so on bigger properties, would you also give advice on swales?
Yes. You can do swales at a small scale, like you can run one right the way around your house like a mini moat. except it never fills up with water. It's built so it so the water infiltrates into the ground around it. But also, yes, you can do. I've done up to the subdivision scale, like 50, 60 lots. Everything is built on swales and basins of different types. Yeah, there's no underground networks.
You mean that the water's not piped away at all?
No.
Oh, wow.
No, everything's dealt with on site.
Right. So is this in properties where people were having to put in the infrastructure themselves?
Mm. No, this was done by the developer. Yeah.
Oh, for the estate?
For the whole subdivision, wow. Yeah, and for all of the lots.
That's cool. That's really cool. So hopefully with time we'll see more and more of this.
Hopefully.
Don't sound too hopeful. Have we anything else that you want to cover in terms of, you know, fire. We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, fire's quite a big thing. It will become more common, unfortunately, because of dry and heat events. Also, the actual carbon level in the atmosphere is changing the flammability of many plants. And people are very often quite unconscious or unaware of what they're planting. So there are the New Zealand Fire Service publishes a very useful document on flammability of native plants to use around your house and which ones are safer and which ones less so.
Yeah. Right, okay. So I guess you can't. I think manuka and kanaka, they're a little bit flammable.
They're moderately so. Yeah. Things like broadleaf are fairly hard
yeah.
to
That's
get
good.
Going.
I've got one right next to the eyes.
Cabbage trees are, they're pretty hard to get going. But a cabbage tree, I mean, you don't want it near your driveway or anything. All of those dead fronds and things.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, there are quite a range of plants. Some of the coprosmas are almost impossible to get going.
Mm. Maybe it's something that we could be thinking about at a neighbourhood level. It's maybe not such an issue for Dunedin, but I think in the past it has been. But having that kind of like a wide buffer of natives, non-flammable natives that are growing next to people where people are living.
Yeah, and grow fruit trees down the middle of it.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. To make it productive.
Yeah. You want everything. Everything's got to be multi-use. We're living on a spaceship.
Yeah.
We can't throw anything away.
This is right. This is right. And I think we've forgotten that, haven't we? So, Neville. Obviously, you're quite a big thinker, as well as being a very practical person. What kind of big thoughts have you had? You know, what would you love to see happen? Maybe. Nationally or in our wider communities to help make us more resilient?
I just like to see people realize that they are natural.
So what do you mean by that?
That we are part of nature and that we can be part of nature. And to realize that, to explore that by our actions. Some of the things we do or that we're forced into doing, for instance, driving cars everywhere, we need to probably lobby our councils for better services, for better bicycle paths, also for better subdivision layouts without any cul-de-sacs so we can walk places.
Like connections, yeah, having connections. Yeah. Actually, it's so true. You find yourself down somewhere and you have to retrace your steps all the way back to get out of it.
Yeah, about 30% of our driving is really goes back to bad urban planning. Which is historic and goes back a century or more. But that kind of thinking still exists and is still happening. So I'd like to see people, sort of realizing that and then coming together in small communities. And then where those communities could sort of be neighbors with the next community and working at the catchment level.
Right.
Yeah, solving things and learning to live.
And it probably could be something that could be retrofitted in a fairly easy way, just making little pathways between different communities.
Yep.
And, it's very feasible.
And there are lots of existing rights of way that aren't being used properly or used well. Those are ideal things that neighbourhoods can coalesce around and say, let's turn this narrow strip that no one's using into a useful walkway, join our houses together.
And
do something together. It's doing something together is probably the most important thing, most important part of resilience, because you get to know who's got what skills.
Right. Mm. Yes, yes, yes. And so, because, and then we do have that strength in our togetherness, and someone may be great at growing potatoes and someone else is good at garlic and so forth.
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds like a very good future. And, I definitely agree with you. You know, we do, we need to see that we're part of nature and that, will take us in a better direction. So hopefully we start heading that way. And with your, the work that you're doing, that's getting us in that direction. So, so tell me, if people want to find out, and find your services and find out more about the things that you write about, you write as well, don't you? Where can they go?
Yeah. They can go to my website, which is www.growplan. That's growplan.co.nz. On that page, on the front page, there's a link to my blog, where I write once every 1 or 2 weeks on a range of subjects, like what we've been talking about now, but also landscape, aesthetics, politics,
okay,
and flowers.
Sounds good. Sounds good. We'll check it out. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Nigel. Okay, and thank you for listening. This is Eco Living in Action, and today I've been talking to Nigel Cowburn about resilience and landscapes. Thank you for listening.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. Is there effect our city? Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability related events, hosts regular green drink sessions and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to www.sustainabledunedincity.org.nz.